Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and I want to welcome you to the 911 call. This is the 19th of September, AR Q&A call. This is September 19th, 2011, and for those of you in the call, I want to welcome you. So, for our questions today, the first question, couples retreats. Rick, we've had several weeks in the post-EMS studies on the topic of sex. As we discuss issues of satisfaction, connectedness on every possible level, mind, body, heart, soul, and deepening our relationship, do you have any thoughts or recommendations on couples retreats? I found something on the internet about a couples retreat near Ontario. Don't want to commit to something like this without a recommendation. Perhaps there are such couples weekends with legitimate sex therapists closer to home. Do you have any thoughts or recommendations for us? Addiction and childhood abuse have had to have resulted in some dysfunction and lack of intimacy between us. We are healing our marriage. Could this be a logical next step? Absolutely. And I wish I had a good recommendation for a couples retreat. The ones that Stephanie and I have been involved with, some of them I probably would not recommend. And so off the top of my head, without having done some research, I am not aware of something I could recommend. I would check to see if Layman, who did sheet music, does any retreats. Pinner and Pinner, Clifford and Joyce Pinner, oftentimes do couples retreats. And I would look them up. In particular, anything they would do, as far as I'm concerned, would probably be quite excellent. And they would also be able to clearly address, I think, in anything they did, addiction and childhood abuse. Just for some additional information for the two of you, you might want to consider reading Layman's book, Sheet Music, which I think is very good and would probably be a good start for just reading out loud with each other. Another book I recommend frequently for couples is Restoring the Pleasure by Pinner and Pinner, and I'll have people go through the exercises in that book. Those would be the things that I guess I would start with in terms of making recommendations. So hopefully that'll give you a good start and you can, it'll just get you going on it, and maybe you can find some other things as you go along. Post another question if you have more questions about that. So next question here. Infidelity discovered at death. Question for Rick. How do you heal and recover from a simultaneous death and discovery of affair? It's been very tough grieving for my wife, also trying to uncover the details of the affair and come to terms with it, as there was no opportunity to reconcile, ask questions, etc. Wow, that's not the first time that I've seen this, and you know, I think part of the problem is it leaves so many unanswered questions for you as the hurt spouse, not knowing exactly what had happened, and I just want you to know I just feel horrible that you're even in that situation to begin with. Recommendation, at some point after you get what information you can, you still have to grieve what it was. You may not be able to get all of the questions answered. And in reality, I think at some point, every person, you know, whether it's the hurt or the unfaithful spouse, there comes a limit to how much maybe the unfaithful spouse can get what they've done to you, but there comes a limit too, ultimately, in how much information and how many of the questions you can ultimately get answered, sometimes because the other person doesn't know all the answers. And in those situations, even though that other person may still be alive, there just comes a point where you have to go, okay, I know what I do know, and Lord, I just want to forgive them. You know, God bless them. And I think what makes it more difficult when you're, I think, doing it after a death, it's incredibly confusing because there's probably I think in the grieving process, that whole revelation stage of just almost wanting to understand for you, but yet in grieving, not even knowing, you know, maybe part of who she was, that's got to be incredibly difficult. I wish I had a better information. I think finding what you can, I think maybe writing her some letters about your feelings about that. And if it would help to maybe understand, maybe talking to other people who have been unfaithful, potentially they could answer some of those questions and give you someone to process with. If you knew of other people who have gone through this, that might be the other thing that might help you at least feel like you understand what happened. But I think in the long run, it'll be accepting that you know what you know and just having to grieve that and hopefully forgive that, because you don't want to carry the bitterness, bitterness through that. And you do want to be able to come to peace with her. You know, I would almost say, you know, she may not have fully understood everything she was doing. And my prayer for people is, you know, for God just not to give them what they deserve. Maybe they didn't understand. I just feel bad for her brokenness, and I feel horrible for the situation that left you in. We'll be praying for you here at A Fair Recovery. It's a difficult place. And our next question here, how to settle back into reality. Let's see. After coming back into reality, he went from feeling good and relaxed to pissed off because of the kids. Kids are kids and always going to make it stressful. What is the best thing I can tell him every time the kids trigger his emotions to anger? Then I find out he let our daughter spend a weekend with his so-called good friend who doesn't talk to me anymore while we were away at EMS. Why should he do that? Do I say anything? And if so, what do I say? That really hurts. I would have to say that this is going to be my low for the day that he allowed that to happen. How do you help your hurt mate heal when they're hurting you back? You know, I think that it is really difficult because when the hurt mate, oftentimes, remember I said that over the weekend that pain that is not transmitted or transformed will be transmitted. A lot of times they're still transmitting their pain because they have yet to transform it. I think you have a legitimate right just to let him know that you're being hurt and say, you know, when you did that, it hurt me. I really wouldn't try to mirror his anger. I wouldn't try to go back to vengeance or anything like that. We also talked over the weekend how people change by contrast, not by conflict. And my suggestion would be you just keep trying to love him. You keep your eyes on your goal, and you know where you want to go at this point, and you stay the path. It's not unusual when people come back and they hit reality. They're triggered and they begin to flood because suddenly the reality of what this has all been about comes back once again. But, you know, there's a new place in his heart. There's a new reality that he's now seen that he can also swing back the other direction. So as long as you stay the course and continue what you need to be doing, I think that's probably the best you'll be able to do in that process at this point. Hopefully, by doing that and you just being steady, he'll find his way back at times to the other place. And it's sort of his choice. You just be who you need to be in that process. And I'll get you that other information on the group we were talking about too. So I'll be praying for you. Let's see. Next question here. Is it ever okay for a sex addict to have a Christian friend of the opposite sex? I mean, do all sex addicts just run away and be cut off from the opposite sex interactions or what? Obviously, spending any one-on-one time with them in secluded places is a big no-no. Although what I am questioning is whether those struggling with sexual addiction, even those who don't, can ever have any kind of friendship with those with the opposite sex at all. If so, where is it safe? At work, in small groups, couple settings, at church, in your industry or trade circles? Having been the unfaithful spouse who is trying to set things in their proper place and clean house, I just have trouble on how to handle this. I know infidelity is really high in Christian circles. We all tend to share our hurt, habits, and hang-ups, and this can create intimacy, right? So doesn't that open us to bonds and the opportunity for infidelity? Yes, was somebody there? Because, you know, I think that that is a it's a really tough situation. I guess it depends a little bit on the context of where the couple is at. I mean, I don't know that I have any friendships with females personally that I spend time with. I have people at work I am friendly with. I mean, I'm cordial. I have people who work for me. I don't know that it depends, I guess, on how you define friend. The best book I know on this topic is Shirley Glass's book, Not Just Friends. And what I find is I need to have safeguards, at least personally. I don't want the appearance of anything inappropriate to happen in any of the relationships that I have. And I want to protect them as well as kind of protecting Stephanie and my marriage. So even though I may talk with someone at times, I would be in a group setting. I certainly don't travel with women. I don't. I won't ride it in a car alone. Again, I don't even want the appearance of something. But in a small group, I think at church, there are certainly women there that, and even in our work group, we have women on our team, and I don't sit there and not talk to them because they're female. But at the same time, I keep things professional, and I try to be considerate of, you know, not sending them or giving them wrong messages. I think that a lot of times in friendships, what happens is it gets confusing because we can start doing things like pimping tenderness, where maybe part of our pattern is feeling good about ourselves because we're building someone else up. I mean, we're trying to be the solution and help them out. But ultimately, I want to point people to the solution. I don't really want to be their solution. I don't want to be their source. I don't want to try to draw them to me because for some strange reason, I need the validation or affirmation that comes from people being are paying attention to me. I want to be able to, again, point them to the one that is in me, but not me personally. And so I think it gets confusing in that sense as to, you know, what's our motive even for wanting a friendship like that. The danger of most friendships is that you share something in common with that person that you don't share with your mate. For instance, the workplace, that's a separate and apart relationship. And so I will share things in common potentially if I have a what I would call a friend at work female friend at work, I would be sharing something in common with her that I don't share with my mate. And it would be easy in that sort of relationship, why they're dangerous, I think, to begin to admire them and appreciate them and to see they could give me affirmation in a way that my mate potentially couldn't. And so it would be real easy for something to form. That's where I think office affairs begin, from relationships that are too close. Again, at a couple setting, where is it safe? Certainly, I think at a couple setting where you're with your mate, at church where you're with your mate, it's where it is secret to me, and it's really cut off from your mate, that it's something you share in common with the other person that you don't share with your mate, that it gets to be a problem. So I don't know if I've actually been able to answer your question, but hopefully that gives you some directions. And again, reading Shirley Glass's book, Not Just Friends, I think you would find that to be an excellent source of information, where you might be able to find a few answers on that. Now, I'm checking here to see if any more questions have been posted today. Hang on, it's coming back up. There we go. Okay, I guess that is the end of the questions today. Thank you all for joining the call, and I hope you have a great week to healing.